There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. End zone. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
Happy New Year, happy 2025 to all the viewers for NFL Friday and WFUV's exclusive NFL podcast. What's up, everybody? It's Will Talent here alongside me, Lou Orlando, and Evan Harkin for the first, I would say probably the first of all of our podcasts for 2025 here at WFUV. Lots to talk about in the NFL, a big week 17. Some playoff scenarios have dwindled, some still at the forefront, specifically in the AFC. And we look locally, the Giants, they definitely hindered their draft status with a big win over the Colts. We'll get into all of that and more here on NFL Friday. But Lou, Evan, Happy New Year, and what's going on, guys?
Happy New Year to you guys, man. No one I'd rather go into the big 2025 with. So amped up, amped to be here.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you guys as well. Also amped up. It was very crazy watching that Giants game in person, so I'm very excited to talk about that. And the preview playoff games we have this week. I always love when you have those games that act like playoff games towards the end of the regular season. So excited for that.
Yeah, a lot of high leverage football this past week. Christmas Day, fun games to start with. Chiefs, Steelers, Ravens, Texans. Definitely games with some playoff implications in them. Ravens, Texans could be a matchup that we see. And the Ravens, they kind of handed it to the Texans. But overall, very fun week. Bengals, Broncos too. That was probably the game of the week, at least for myself. That was an electric ball game. Overtime win for the Bengals. Big game for Joe Burrow and T. Higgins. The Bucks, they beat the Panthers. That kind of closes things up for the NFC. There's only two things that really need to be decided in the NFC, and that is the NFC South between the Bucks and the Falcons. And it's probably going to go the Bucks' way there as they sit at 9-7. And then the number one seed, which is also for the NFC North between the Vikings and the Lions. That should be a good game coming up for week 18. But let's start with the AFC playoff picture, though, guys. That one has a little bit more going into it. So let's just break it down real quick. Baltimore can clinch the AFC North with and a number three seed if they win or tie and a Pittsburgh loss or tie. Pittsburgh can clinch the AFC North with a win for themselves and a Baltimore loss. Denver gets into the playoffs with a win or a tie, or a Miami loss slash tie and a Cincinnati loss or tie. That's probably the golden ticket. That's the big game. That's the scenario to watch. See if the Bengals can pull it off after a slow start to the season. Miami can get in with a win and a Denver loss. And Cincinnati, for them to get in, they need to win. Denver needs to lose. And Miami needs to lose or tie. So lots going on here with the AFC, specifically in that wild card. Let's focus in on the Broncos, the Bengals, and the Dolphins, all teams fighting for that last playoff spot. Start with you, Lou. Where do you think that's going to go, and who is going to make it out of that trio there?
I still think it's Denver. And I think if you're an NFL fan, I think you can't go wrong either way with Bengals or Broncos. I think Miami is very clearly like the smaller run to the litter. Like if they sneak in, that's going to be the team no one's excited about. That's the obvious first round exit. I think Broncos and Bengals, when you're looking just in terms of what's going to make this playoffs exciting, what's going to make this opening round exciting. And because of their quarterback play, you at least buy into if Bo Nix or Joe Burrow goes off, that's going to be a tough first round game for whoever the two seed is, probably the Bills. I there's so much stacked against the Bengals here. Miami has been on a backup quarterback in Tyler Huntley. But even if they've kind of been finding ways to win, if Denver can maybe beat the Chiefs if they sit their starters. I think there's a lot stacked against Cincinnati right now. I will say what makes me uncomfortable is that I feel like the Broncos have cooled off from, and we got to November, December, and I started to really buy into them as a fun team that could make maybe a surprise playoff run. I don't know how deep I am with that anymore, just because as good as I still think Bo Nix is, as good as I still think this defense is, I think they've faltered a little bit in this stretch to make you doubt whether or not like this is a big week and a big showing for them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that spot has got to be the Broncos right now. I mean, if you look on NFL.com, their current's at 83%. That's bearing a win or loss. And then Dolphins at 12, Bengals at 5. So like you were saying, Lou, they have all the power here. All you have to do is beat the Carson Wentz-led Chiefs, which we know still won't be easy. That's still an Andy Reid Chiefs team. But still think the Broncos win that game, get in. And I don't know. I think the Broncos can make a little bit of a run. I was right there with you, Lou, throughout the season, kind of thinking this defense is really good if Bo Nix starts to play a little bit better. And I think Bo Nix using his legs so much more down the stretch, he doesn't have as many passing stats as he did early on, but has really found his legs. I think that's been helping him out a lot, especially as a rookie, being able to use his athleticism instead of make mistakes like rookies usually do. So I think the Broncos definitely get in and have a nice run. But if the Bengals can squeeze in, we always know that what the Bengals can do in the playoffs. So that'll be pretty fun to see also. But I think it's got to be the Broncos.
Right, like either way, you're getting, if you somehow get the Bengals, you're getting the guy that leads the NFL in passing yards, passing touchdowns, that's going to make the MVP race interesting, or you're getting this awesome young rookie quarterback in Bo Nix. The throw he made against Cleveland the other day, or was it Atlanta? The throw he made in that game to send it to overtime,
Fuck.
unreal. That throw to Mims, like that is
Yeah.
unreal stuff.
Tight window.
That's one of the best throws I've seen all season long.
Definitely. That was that I was watching it live and I was in shock that that is what happened. That was an unreal throw, double coverage as well, right to the corner of the end zone. Not a lot of room to work with if you're Mims and he got it in for the touchdown score. That was really, really epic. I'm kind of there with the Broncos in terms of they will be the team. I'd like to see the Bengals because this team, personally, I think is a lot better than what their record says. I know their defense has been a little spotty all year round, but they lost some close games early on. They dropped some games they really just should not have dropped whatsoever. Didn't they lose to the Patriots very early on in the season?
For opening week.
Yeah, so games like that, they definitely squandered opportunities late here in the season. But I don't think the record reflects how good of a team they are. Yeah, Joe Burrow will make the MVP conversation a little bit more interesting, especially if he wins a playoff game. If they do get in, that would be very, very interesting. And Jamar Chase too. He there's a good chance that he wins the Triple Crown as a receiver. First time that we'll have seen that since Cooper Kupp. Doesn't happen all that often too. So I think the more electric team to make it would be the Bengals. I could see them of the three going on a run. I really don't see the Broncos making a run like that. I think the Bengals would give the Bills the best run for their money in the wild card round, but the Broncos do ha they are 10.5 point favorites for this game against the Chiefs, where everyone is sitting for the Chiefs. So that makes things a lot harder for the Bengals, who are playing the Steelers, who are not sitting anybody because they need to try to get in via the AFC North title spot. So if I were to guess, I would say this is going to go to the Broncos, but it obviously is going down to week 18. And that's what you want. That's what you hope for. But let's talk about that AFC North matchup real quick, though, too. Bengals Steelers means a lot for both teams here. Burrow and Wilson, Chase Brown, Najee, Jameer. I said Jameer. That's crazy. Jamar Chase and George Pickens. Lots of stars going back and forth here. I really could see the Bengals roster. They are 1.5-point favorites. Steelers have kind of been going cold, and we've seen this with a lot of these Steelers teams over the last 5 or 6 years. They start off really good, really hot. They may not be the best team. Like they had that fluke, what was it, 13-0, 12-0, whatever it was a few years ago. Yeah. And then they dropped four straight, something like that, en route to a first-round exit. This Steelers team has dropped 3 in a row. Now, granted, they've played some really tough teams. They had to play the Eagles, Ravens, and Chiefs, all fully healthy, not sitting anybody, all of them of which playing for something at the time. Very, very difficult. And now they have to play the Bengals, who they beat in week 13, 44-38 in Cincinnati. But I think this Bengals team has gotten a little stronger, and I'm losing a little bit of confidence in the Steelers, even though they've played some bigger opponents down the stretch.
I mean, I think they've lost confidence, like in themselves a little bit. I think that I was trying to go back to when the pinpoint moment of what I felt like was a little bit of decline in just the level of the play, the swagger of their play. I can't tell if it's that snowy game against the Browns where Jameis led Cleveland back to that win. You want to go further down. They have some tough losses here. And I know you said the past few weeks it's contenders, it's the Eagles, it's the Ravens, but like that's the level of team that you play in the postseason this year. Like most of the teams in the playoffs, especially the top dogs, like if you're facing the Ravens in the second round, if you somehow get to a Super Bowl and you're playing the Eagles or another one of the big dogs out of the NFC, the fact that they've gotten beaten by multiple scores in games that, against what I would consider top opponents, like that's got to be a big shock to the system, to a Pittsburgh team that I've just really had a tough time figuring them out. And so I'm kind of surprised. Like they don't strike me, and they coming into the year, they did not strike me as a 10-win team. Obviously, they get off to that great start, but it is kind of funny. It's like they can't escape this narrative, whether it's fair or not, that when the Steelers are good, no one really ever buys into them being as good as their record usually says they are. That's probably not a fair shake. Like, they are a very well-coached team. They do a lot of the little things right. But for whatever reason, I feel like public opinion, public confidence, always way lower on Pittsburgh than probably what other teams with a similar record would be.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bengals, the hot team right now. When you look at that, the Steelers, the cold team. I mean, the Bengals on a 4-game win streak, just beat a really good defense in the Broncos. We saw that game. So now they're going to be playing a good defense again in the Steelers, but we already saw them put 38 points up against this good defense. And I usually like to take good defenses against good offenses, especially when that defense is the Bengals defense. It's embarrassing to watch them try to tackle. I find it hilarious watching them play sometimes, but it goes to show if the Steelers can put 44 points on you in your home stadium, how bad your defense is. So I think the Steelers being the hot team, and then you brought up the teams, Will, that they've been playing, the Ravens, the Eagles, the Chiefs. These are teams that beat you up, teams that have big, bruising running backs. Their running game is designed for them to play better in the fourth quarter because they've been beating up on you the whole game. So not only did you lose those three games, but you got probably battered and bruised against those three really good teams coming into this one. I think it's got to be the Bengals, the hot team in this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think I will go Bengals with that once we talk our picks for sure. I just don't like the trajectory that the Steelers have been on. And granted, with these teams that they're playing against the NFC champs, you're playing against the NFC East champs, the AFC West champs, and then potentially the AFC North champs with yourself in the Baltimore Ravens. But I think that game for me was the turning point of the Eagles are a juggernaut, 100%. Could very, very easily see them making the Super Bowl. at least a conference championship against the Lions, in my opinion. And the Chiefs, they're the Chiefs. They played their best ball game of the season in week 17. That could be a little telltale sign for them. Really, obviously, their record speaks a lot there. They're 15-1, but are they the best 15-1 team that we've seen? Probably not. They haven't even scored 30 points yet. The Giants put up 30 and 40 before the Chiefs did this year. So, but
Crazy.
it is crazy. It's very hard to fathom, and I can't wait to talk about it. But the Chiefs are the Chiefs, the Eagles are the Eagles. That big game for the Steelers was that Ravens game, and they were in it until they weren't. That Ravens defense came all the way out against the Steelers, specifically in the second half, putting up points where they needed to as well. And the Steelers just looked kind of flat-footed in that Week 16 matchup. But yeah, I will go with the Bengals against the Steelers. Now, I know it's in Pittsburgh. It is the late night cap as well. It will be Sunday Night Football at 8 p.m., but primetime slot. I'll take the Bengals. They're hot right now. They've been playing the football that they need to play. So we'll see. I think the AFC North will eventually go to the Baltimore Ravens, though. Let's talk about the final game of this scenario. It's the Dolphins and it's the Jets. Probably the weaker game of the three here. And it makes me a little concerned for the Dolphins. Now, I know Tyler Huntley is starting. It's not Tua. So this margin would have been a little bit greater if Tua was starting, but just 1.5 point favorites against the New York Jets. That to me is a little, oh, it just changed. Now they are 1 point favorites.
Oh, wow.
Literally just now, it just changed. That is crazy to think about. If you are the Miami Dolphins eyeing a playoff spot and playing a team that is going to get a top 10 draft pick. But I don't have a lot to say on this game. I think the Dolphins are the weakest team of the three that are eyeing these playoff spots, but could be a nice win for the Jets and they plummet a little bit more in the draft. I don't know. Or the Dolphins, they go 9-8 after a huge injury-riddled season with not just Tua, but Jalen Waddle as well. Tyreek Hill hasn't played as the Tyreek Hill that we know him to be. And I really don't expect Jalen Waddle to play for the rest of this season. He's been really banged up over the last 5 or 6 weeks or so. This game is also, let me just double check. I'm on it, but I want to make sure. Yeah, it's in New York. That could also factor into what the spread is there. But Evan, our New York Jets beat reporter, maybe just talk a little bit about the Jets, what you think about this game in particular, and what is it? Obviously, we know what it means for the Dolphins, but I think there's a little validity as to why the Dolphins are only 1 point favorites. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, 100%. I think most of it is the point you made about it being at MetLife this year. The Jets are historically bad when playing down in Miami. I forget exactly what the stat is, but they have like two or three wins in the last 10 or plus years when playing down in Miami. So it's a lot different. The Dolphins don't win the games nearly as much when they play them in MetLife because they don't have that heat factor. You know, they're so used to the heat down there. Now coming up in the cold, it's actually the opposite for them because they're so used to the South and all that. So I think the weather is a major reason for that. Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback that played in Green Bay his whole career, very good at throwing the ball in the cold weather and all that. And as we know, Tua won't be playing, but I'm not sure if Tyler Huntley is accustomed to the cold or not. But we have seen the weather make a big difference, and not only the Southern teams having the advantage playing in the hot where teams aren't used to being as hot, but vice versa as well. Also, the Jets are just one of those teams where you have a bunch of good players. You're just not a good team. And there's a lot of elite talent everywhere. So you have to expect one of those games where they finally put something together, especially when nothing really matters. That's really when teams like that start to play better. Teams that are typically unwell coached, that just don't know how to put it all together, but have those good players. So this could be one of those games for the Jets where they drop 35 points. It's a big game for Garrett Wilson or something like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets pull this one away. And I think it would be a big win for the culture. You know, a big message around the Giants locker room was that the players felt pride in winning that game, especially because they had nothing to play for. So it felt a little bit more gritty for both them, the fans, and the organization. So maybe trying to get a little bit of that grit will be the Jets trying to get a win this Sunday.
And I think it's if the Jets do win this game, it's a little bit different than what we'll get into with the Giants for a couple different reasons, but I think an underrated part of this is I think there's some satisfaction in keeping a division rival out of the playoffs. Even if this, like, the Jets beating Miami is not a, it's not, it wouldn't be, I don't think, posted all over social media as a crazy upset. I don't think anyone really expects the Dolphins to make the playoffs. It's still cool to shut that door on them. And like, as a Giants fan, thinking about some of the times, some of the things the Eagles have done to, I'm still salty about the Nate Sudfeld game when the Eagles
Oh,
played
totally.
Washington and they punted. But I think Eagles fans were thrilled to keep us out of the playoffs, and I remember seeing that all over social media. I think it should be a similar thing with the Jets. Like, there's no, obviously, I don't think the Dolphins are the hated rival in that division. I think if you're going in order, it's probably Pats, Bills, Dolphins for most Jets fans in terms of hatred. But it's still cool to shut a team in the AFC East out of the postseason and again end the season on a high mark of, all right, hey, we're building at something, I guess. I mean, I think there's so many questions about who's still going to be on this roster next year. The trade rumors are swirling. Who's going to be the QB next year? There is a lot that no one really knows right now. And I think that's what makes looking at this game and looking at this season, I think, so difficult. But I mean, the other thing is a little bit of a measuring stick about, in my mind, are the Jets better than the Dorian Thomas Robinson-led Cleveland Browns? Because Miami beat DTR and Cleveland 20-3. So if the Jets get blown out here, that means I'm putting the Jets in really, really bad company with the level of play that they have down the stretch of the season. So I think it should be a much closer game. But I also didn't necessarily expect the Dolphins to beat Cleveland by 17. Like, I was kind of hoping that maybe Cleveland would luck into a win, and we'll talk about the Giants. That would help the Giants out a lot. Cleveland came nowhere close. So even with Huntley in at quarterback, like, I don't know, there's still a lot of like elite talent on that Miami team. There's a reason that they're still in playoff contention going into week 18, which I probably kind of surprising when you look at some of the teams that have already been eliminated. You would not put Miami in a crew of the last men standing, but here they are. So I think there's moral victories at play for the Jets, and also a little bit of competitive, like, hey, let's prove that we're not one of the worst teams in the NFL here in week 18.
I think, and all injuries aside, this Dolphins roster, personally, this probably could have been a 10 to an 11 win team if all went right for them. Tua went down pretty early. Jaylen Waddle was, like I said, banged up pretty much all year. They were still very consistent enough to where they're in this position right now. But if you get a full season out of every one of their key stars, all of their X factors, we're probably having a different conversation in week 18, but here we are now. They're 8-8. They have a shot to make it. They need some things to go their way. I don't think it will happen for them. But what you were saying, Lou, yeah, if you're a Jets fan, that would be, I think that would be pretty cool to take out an in-division rival to not make the playoffs. That would be pretty special for them, especially where they are in the draft. They're not in the quarterback conversation. This isn't an overly touted prospect group like we had last year, where every pick really mattered a lot. It's the quarterbacks right now. It's Travis Hunter, who's probably going to go number one overall if it's the Patriots, who don't need a quarterback, and it's Ashton Jeanty. Have to look a little bit more into the draft prospects, but there haven't been the names standing out like we saw last year, pretty much at every single position. You look at Joe Alt, you had Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers, and then you had the boatload of quarterbacks that came out of this class. And we still have yet to see one in JJ McCarthy. So not so much of the same situation this year as it was last year. So if you're eyeing for a draft pick as a Jets fan, you're probably still going to end up with a good one, even if the Jets do win, and it could be something that would be of immediate impact for the Jets. But let's talk about the Giants now. Let's move over to the NFC. We'll talk a little bit about the NFC playoff picture, but there's a lot more to talk about with these New York Giants. They beat the Colts 45 Oh my God, they scored 45 points. It was 45 to 33. I don't even know how many points they've scored over the last 10 years or so, but it was the most amount of points in a very long time for the Giants. I don't remember the last time they scored 35. Actually, it may have been against the Colts when they made the playoffs that year. But
What
40, forget it, I don't remember.
the Saints game, that Manning Breeze like shootout, that must have been 45, right?
Could have been, yeah.
It was
But
5 touchdowns.
that's one of the few games I can think of that would even be in the ball. It's crazy to think the Giants put up 45 points. It's unreal.
It's so crazy. This team specifically, if it was with Eli and they were bad, fine, you know. But this team, they've had four quarterbacks. They've had just a boatload of turmoil all year long. And they put something together. For me personally, as a fan of the team, I was pretty upset that they did not sell out for this pick. I really want Ward or Sanders. Just give me one. But I was happy for the players. They looked like a good football team. Drew Lock had a legacy game. Unbelievable stuff from Drew Lock. That was probably the best game he's ever played. 17 of 23 for 309 passing yards, four passing touchdowns. He also had one on the ground to go along with. He had no yards rushing and he rushed five times, but he had a touchdown. So five total touchdowns. Also didn't get sacked at all. Didn't throw any interceptions as well. Very clean game for a Giants quarterback in general. That was pretty cool to see. Malik Nabers had seven catches for 171 yards and two touchdowns. That's what I was most excited about. If they lost, it would have been even better. But the fact that Malik Nabers made an exclamation point of a game in the fashion that he did was very pumped for that. Hit over 1,100 yards, I think it was. And he's got over 100 receptions. I think he's seventh in receiving yards, and he's pretty high up there in receptions in the NFL, not just rookies. He probably leads all rookies. He's up there with Brian Thompson Jr. So really happy for Malik Nabers. Tyrone Tracy, he was all right. He had 20 carries for 59 yards. He did pretty well receiving too. I like that he can do that in only two catches and 14 yards. But Tyrone Tracy has been a revelation for this team. It's very, very fun to see. Amir Smith-Marset took it to the house. That was kind of the nail in the coffin for me. Happy for him. 100-yard kick return opened the second half in that game. The longest for a Giant player to open the second half since 1945. Yep. Long, long time ago. Officially 80 years ago today. Really great. Really, really great stuff. A couple of interceptions as well. Drew Phillips, he got an interception. Excellent cornerback for the Giants. He's been part of an excellent 2024 draft class for Joe Shane and Dane Belton as well. He collected one. But overall, yeah, did they knock the Colts out of the playoff race? Sure. Do I really care about that? Not really. Didn't really matter at all for me. Was really only happy that Malik Nabers played extremely well. But overall, I know we're all Giants guys and we probably all have our takes on it here. But overall, Lou, I was a little disappointed in this game. They really hurt themselves. Not so much that the Patriots are going to get the first overall pick, but they dropped all the way to fourth in the current standings. And the two teams ahead of them in the Browns and the Titans, they're probably going to take quarterbacks. And the Browns are the most interesting case here. The Titans, I think, are a definite lock to take one of them. The Browns may settle with Deshaun Watson and run it back again and then wait a different year for a quarterback. Don't really see the Giants drafting up, but that's where we're at. They're fourth overall. They lose out on the number one overall pick.
I'm still, part of me is still coping in the sense of looking at the scenarios, any way that the Titans or Browns could fall below us in the draft order. I think there's maybe a world where Tennessee beats Houston this week if Houston's sitting CJ Stroud and all their guys that they're going to need in the playoffs. They're already a little banged up with that Tank Dell injury. No, this one. And it's weird to say that it stings because I usually, and even in past years, have been a. At the end of the day, I'm a Giants fan. I like it when the team wins. And so I really don't like to have this mindset of rooting against the Giants. So even like last year when DeVito beat the Packers, like that was fun. I was happy. The year Jones, as a rookie, beat the Commanders and we lost out in the Chase Young Bowl. I was just electrified by those performances. I was happy. This is probably the first time that the Giants have won a game, and I not only could I not care less, like it ruined my day. It ruined my mood, and it's because this season's just been so bad. And I think for all Giants fans to go through the pain, the torture, just this slug of a season where halfway through you knew you were not going to be anywhere close to competitive. And in terms of just watchability, it's one of the worst Giants seasons that we've had to live through. To watch it maybe all culminate not even in one of the top two quarterbacks in this draft class, which is already a very thin draft class for quarterbacks to begin with. It's so Giants. It feels so spot on the nose. But it's brutal, man, because reality starts to set in about this might not be the only bad season that we'll have to endure. Because here's the thing, and Will and Jack and I had this conversation yesterday. I don't think this season is as bad in terms of vibes-wise as the Jake Fromm Glennon year. I actually think there's a lot more to buy into this season. Tracy and Neighbors on the offensive end, they're the third rookie duo ever to both get 1,000 yards. Like, that's awesome. You hope that this is your future running back for the next few seasons. You hope that you found your next stud receiver. On the defensive end, oh, we talk about Newbin. I know Newbin's hurt now, but Newbin and Drew Phillips, you got these young studs in the secondary, and you have legitimate defensive talent. Like, before Dexter Lawrence got hurt, Will, we were talking about he's probably a defensive player of the year candidate before he gets hurt. And Andrew Thomas going down. Like, so many core pieces went down this year, but pieces that should be here long term that you either already believe are studs or you're starting to see potential from the young guys here. Like, there's a lot to buy into and be excited about for the future. But what have we learned? It's not going to matter if you don't have a quarterback. Hey, it's awesome that Malik Nabers might be a top 10 wide receiver for the next 10 years. If he doesn't have a good quarterback throwing him the football, we're going to run into the stuff that you see happen other places where you have a disgruntled star wide receiver and maybe he's not here for that long. Or it doesn't matter if you have the defensive player of the year if your offense can't put up 20 points consistently. So the prospect that after everything that's happened this year, that the Giants might not have their answer, might have to do this all over again, that's as big of a kick in the gut as Giants fan could ever get.
Right, I think it's right there at the end, though, like having to do it all over again. I'm actually rocking a Danny Dimes t-shirt right now, ironically, but I like we all are very scared as Giants fans that that might have to happen all over again, another situation like that. Being there at MetLife, I think it started out as kind of a joke, like a ha-ha in the press box. Look at the Giants playing so well. No one really thought that they were, I think, one, trying to win the game at all, and then would even end up winning the game. So it kind of just, there was a reporter next to me, and his first question was, do you think the fans would be happy about this? And I was actually interested to see if the MetLife crowd would react positively to the Giants officially winning the game in the fourth quarter. And they were pretty loud there at MetLife for the Giants winning. And I'm right there with you, Lou, where I used to have the same, I want to see the Giants win. This would usually be a scenario where I'd be in that crowd as well. So excited to see a random Giants win at the end of the season. But the point that it's the number one pick is so much different. Will, you mentioned with the Jets, you don't want to lose this game if you're the Jets because there's not that big of a difference between the eighth and the ninth pick, something like that in this year's draft. But you need a quarterback. We had the number one pick as the New York Giants, and then you go and do this. So it's definitely alarming for Giants fans and pretty much the worst scenario this season could have gone at that point. Like Giants fans, I think just wanted to end off the season, go get Cam Ward or Shador, pick which one they want, have the number one pick finally, and then it completely goes off the rails in that win. And it just makes sense that the New York Giants can't even win right. They lose when they win.
And it's no, you got Will.
It's kind of like the Trevor Lawrence Jets situation. That's the
Exactly.
thing. Yes.
And Trevor Lawrence, I would say, is probably a higher touted prospect for that draft class compared to Sanders and Ward, but the principle is still the same here. The Giants had the number one pick locked up probably for a few weeks now, too. All they had to do was lose to the Colts. That was really all they had to do. It didn't really matter. And they couldn't get that done. So yeah, like what you said, Ev, they can't even lose properly. It was a little disheartening. I'm right there with you guys. I want to see my team succeed as well. I got to a point this year where I was just, I was done. It's like, just lose out. Just lose out. It doesn't even matter at this point. We need a quarterback. If you look at the free agent class too, it's not appealing. It's appealing to we'll sign up a guy for 1 year and we'll see what we can get out of the draft. We're talking Kirk Cousins, we're talking maybe Sam Darnold, but now Sam Darnold, if the Lions lose to the Vikings and the Vikings are the number one seed and they immediately go to a divisional round playoff game, Sam Darnold is not getting a 1 year contract. He's getting like a 3 or a 4 year contract. There is no way you can sit here and tell me that Sam Darnold is getting a 1 year deal. No chance. It's just not happening. You want to go with Justin Fields? Sure, he could be a bridge quarterback. That could work, but I think the moral of the story is the Giants are not going to be good next year, and that's okay. But you need to set yourself up so you are going to be good. We bring up Dexter Lawrence. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I do know that his contract isn't going to last forever. It's been a while since he signed that extension. So, same with Andrew Thomas. He signed that 4 year extension. We're wasting these years. You had that one playoff run, and now you are bottom of the barrel. You are as low as you possibly can go, literally. Well, not anymore. Actually, you're the fourth tier to as low as you can possibly go. You were down there though. But everything about this season has just been a mess. Since that Seahawks win, everything outside of that and after has been a total train wreck for the New York Giants. And this draft is probably it could be a very similar story. I don't really know what they're gonna do. They gotta hope that the Browns are banking on Watson so they can get Sanders or Ward, whoever's available. And I don't want them to get Carson Beck. I really don't want them to do that. I don't think he's that great. And he's coming off a UCL injury. Don't have a lot of hopes for Jackson Dart as well. It's a very thin quarterback class in a year where you need a quarterback. Maybe they take a pick. Maybe they I really don't think they should trade that pick at this point. If it was the first overall pick and you were going to get some NFL talent with it, that would make a little bit of sense, kind of like what the Bears and Panthers did. But we're not at that situation right now. So I don't think it's worth trading the pick. Find something that you need. If you don't get a quarterback, you're probably not going to be good that next year. There's a shot you could land Arch Manning if you're in the top three again. So we'll see, man. I don't really know where the Giants are going. I will say this too. We could talk about this a little bit here, what they may do to shake things up. I keep teetering on this. And I think I will finally take a pick here. And that is, I think Dable and Shane are both going to stay. I don't think either of them gets fired. If one of them were to get fired, it would be Brian Dable. I really can't see them getting rid of Shane. If they get Shane, Dable's probably gone too. And I don't see that happening. I think it's a little too premature to pull the plug on this regime. Personally, you gave Gettleman a little bit of a longer leash there. I know it was a different situation that he walked into and left. But at the same time, I think it's a little early to pull the plug on this regime. Give them a quarterback that they want to take and develop. See if that works out. They missed on the Jones pick, or on the Jones signing. Their draft last year was pretty good, though, and I'll give them that. But I would stand pat with Dable and Shane will return for 25-26 next year.
I mean, I would like to see Brian Dable with a quarterback that he doesn't hate. Because I mean, right, that was the joke in Giants Twitter for the last 2 years was looks like he really does not like Daniel Jones. He yells at him a lot and he
Oh,
glares
yeah.
at him a lot. So I think it'd be fun to see. You saw in Hard Knocks in the preseason the way Dable's eyes lit up when he talked to Jaden Daniels, and my God, the amount of dreams I've had about like what would this team look like if they had Jaden Daniels? Wouldn't that
And
be
Drake
fun?
May, too. He loved Drake May.
Yeah.
Know what? I kind of like Drake May too. He's pretty fun. The one thing I keep hearing is I keep hearing people say, "Well, you know what? Maybe winning this game against the Colts was a blessing in disguise." this is a weak quarterback class. Like, do you really want to put all your eggs in the basket of the weakest quarterback class in the last 5 years? I kind of do, because I think one of the worst things the Giants could do is continue to be directionless. And that's kind of what the last few years of Daniel Jones have been like, is it's just this big uncertainty of, well, hopefully the O-line holds up, hopefully Jones is healthy, and hopefully that's enough. Hopefully he takes the leap. A lot of hoping. There would be hoping with a rookie quarterback, but it would at least be new and fresh. And what's been so awful about this stretch ever since cutting Daniel Jones is that it's very clear that this is just a bridge into getting to the end of the season. And they weren't even able to bridge that gap well, because they accidentally or on purpose won a game, and it's hurt their ability to get a quarterback. So if the Giants go into next year and it's Justin Fields or it's Kirk Cousins, does it mean they're going to be the worst team in the NFL? Probably not. I think both those quarterbacks will actually be better than Drew Lock. But it just means that you're kicking the can down the hill of, like, all right, we're still waiting for our actual quarterback of the future. Part two, the other side of it is, I'm very conscious about Malik Nabers. He's a guy that wears his emotions on his sleeve. In his pre-draft interviews, was very open about, I hate losing. I don't want to be in a losing environment. This kid wants to win bad. And I'm just very conscious about the mental toll it takes on a young stud wide receiver when the organization just feels like a mess. The offense just feels completely out of sync. It's unreal that Nabers put up 1,000 yards this year when you think about the quarterbacks that were throwing him the football. And I was a Daniel Jones defender, but this was one of his worst seasons. And it's a pivot to Drew Lock and DeVito, and it's unreal. It speaks to his talent level, what he's been able to do. But look around the league. There have been stud wide receivers. That's the risk of drafting a wide receiver high when you don't have your quarterback of the future, is you run the risk of that wide receiver getting disgruntled, getting unhappy, and asking out. It's going to be very interesting if the Jets keep Garrett Wilson after this season. If you're the Giants, you do not want a situation where people are talking about what trade packages look like for Malik Nabers. You want this to be better than the Odell situation. Like, you would love it if this doesn't end the way Odell did. So, to me, I think there's a lot of pressure to appease Malik Nabers and give him an environment that he's at least going to buy into. Is Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders the future? I really don't know. I like Cam Ward for his swagger and his, like, confidence when he plays more than anything else. He's not the most talented quarterback I've ever seen, but I think it's at least something that the team could buy into of, all right, it's at least a chance to develop somebody new. It's an unquantified potential, as opposed to, all right, we kind of know what Justin Fields is. We kind of know what Kirk Cousins is. I just don't want to keep kicking that can down the line. I will say, if to the Dable and Shane point, if they don't trade up to take a quarterback here, and that's the other part of that, when people say maybe it's a blessing in disguise, what's more likely? The Giants signing Justin Fields, or the Giants giving up a ton of assets to make sure they get a quarterback here? Part of me wonders if they're feeling the pressure. But if they do kick the can down the line and they take, like, a Fields or something like that, if it's another underwhelming season with a bridge quarterback, I don't know how Dable and Shane survived that. As much as I do think that Shane had a good draft, at a certain point, if there's no clear future or no clear direction, it just makes it hard. And it might not even be their fault. I just don't know how much longer of a leash you can give Shane and Dable.
Yeah, to your point about Nabers, I think it's more important now than ever in the NFL to make your young talent feel comfortable, feel welcome, feel like they want to be a part of your team. You mentioned Garrett Wilson as well. Rookies nowadays, not even just rookies, players on their rookie contracts still are nothing like the rookies of, say, the early 2000s, where it was all grit. You made no money, you had to go earn everything out there. These guys were millionaires when they were 18 years old. They were getting NIL money now. They understand they come into the league already as millionaires, making more than most of the team already is. They understand that they have a voice with social media and everything. Your team revolves so much more around the vibe and your young players wanting to buy in. And that's just no, that hasn't been what the Giants have been able to do because of the quarterback. You know, it would be similar to a Saquon situation if Nabers eventually just wanted to leave. And the Giants couldn't pay him because they know he's worth the money, but they know if they pay him the money that they still won't be good because they don't have a quarterback. you get into this never-ending cycle of players wanting to leave because you can't figure out the right situation, and you really just can't have good young talent. If the Giants were to draft a good young player that wasn't a quarterback, it's safe to stay. Like you said, Lou, if they had a bridge quarterback or two, that receiver, or if it wasn't a receiver, any other player would be upset with the Giants and their record in a couple of years, and we'd see the same situation that we're seeing with Garrett Wilson and Malik Nabers. So I think the Giants have to go get one of those bridge quarterbacks, though. I think they'd have to get a Justin Fields, a Kirk Cousins, something like that, because I think the Browns are going to take a quarterback there. I know money talks, and I know Deshaun Watson has that huge contract, but like we've seen, I think the Browns understand that Deshaun Watson really isn't all in on the NFL. He's definitely not all in on the Browns. I really doubt Deshaun Watson plays a full season again in his career, whether it be injury, whether it be him being benched. So I think the right move for the Cleveland Browns is to draft whatever quarterback is that's still there. And under Deshaun Watson, just keep him there for when Deshaun Watson isn't playing, because that's going to happen. So I think the Giants are going to have to get a bridge quarterback and probably are going to be bad again, and will be in the situation shooting for Arch Manning next year. But maybe that'll be a little bit better of a quarterback draft, and the Giants won't sell their tank at the end of the season. But there's not too much to look to be hopeful for.
In the long run, if Arch Manning is the next stud quarterback and the Giants find a way to land him, in the grand scheme of things, you're not going to look at the Giants winning this game against the Colts as something that derailed their franchise. But if the Giants are not top three drafting next year, or they don't get the stud quarterback they want at the end of next year and the cycle continues, that's the risk you run. The one thing with the Browns I think is interesting is who has the final say on this decision. Because there was a long time during this season where people wondered, why is Jameis Winston not playing? Deshaun Watson's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Why hasn't he been given a shot yet? And I think they kind of threw the head coach under the bus. It sounded like it was a mandate from up above. We traded for Deshaun Watson. We gave up all these assets. We need him to play. If that mandate is still intact, that's the only way I don't see the Cleveland Browns drafting a quarterback. Only thing is, it would not surprise me if Cleveland Browns ownership was like, we still need to believe in Deshaun Watson because we've invested so much in him. We can't afford to pick a new quarterback to pivot somewhere else. That would make us look awful. I think the irony in that is that they already look awful. By continuing to play Deshaun Watson, you're embarrassing yourselves. But I think there's enough doubt in the intelligence of the Cleveland Browns ownership and management that I could see a world where they are telling their GM, hey, don't draft a quarterback. We need it to be Deshaun. And that's what the Giants should be hoping for.
I really don't know where they go. If they go bridge quarterback, is it really fair to fire Dable and Shane? I don't really know, man.
I don't think it's fair. It's just if it's another middling season,
yeah,
and there's still no direction of the future, sometimes you just have to like wipe your hands clean and pivot in a different direction. Again, I really wonder, like, can the Giants even afford to go the bridge route? Like, I really think if they have, and I think they're hoping they get back into the top three. But if they don't, I mean, they pursued trading up last year pretty aggressively. I think the pressure's on even more now because there's no Daniel Jones to fall back on. And that's even funny to say, but like, there were people and there were fans in this organization that believed in Daniel Jones. There's not a quarterback on this roster that this fan base or I think this organization believes should be leading the Giants that's on this team right now. So I don't know. You're telling me that John Mara wouldn't pressure Shane to be like, no, we need a quarterback this year. You have to make it happen. And then you're talking about giving up assets to trade up. And now we're talking about, all right, you traded up, let's say with the Patriots. It's still the worst quarterback class in the past 5 years. So it's one thing if you just earned the pick and you got the chance to take, you had the right to take a chance on Ward or Shadur. If you give up assets to then take a chance on them and it backfires, then that's an even bigger, like, the more I put it into words, the more it sounds like something that would happen to the Giants.
Yeah. It would be very Giant-esque for something like that to go down. But We'll see what happens with them, man. That's all you can really say at this point. There's a lot of different directions that they could end up going. Hopefully, it is the right decision that they do make and get all Giants fans out of this just purgatory of slum, man. It just hasn't been good at all. They've had two solid seasons since their last Super Bowl, and they've won one playoff game. So obviously, we're at a much lower level than that now. When they won that playoff game against the Vikings, it was up from there, and they've just completely backtracked everything that went down in that season. So the Giants, closing take for me, we've all kind of said it. You're drafting more for Malik Nabers than you are drafting for a quarterback. You got to make sure that Malik Nabers stays no matter what. He needs to be a Giant. You cannot run into a Saquon incident where you're torn on if you should pay the quarterback or if you should pay your best player. Malik Nabers is very clearly the best player right now. So you have to fill in the pieces with the quarterback, but you got to make sure that Malik Nabers stays happy and stays wanting to be a Giant. That's your ticket. If you're going to succeed, Malik Nabers needs to be on this team, and there's no question about it. But we'll see where the New York Football Giants go. They are 3-point underdogs against the Philadelphia Eagles going into next week. Saquon Barkley will not play in this game, as I was just reading, and he will sit, as a lot of the starters will also sit. Kenny Pickett is slated to start that game if he's even healthy enough to go. I know he got banged up against Dallas a little bit. Could see him being set as well, but the Giants, I you would think that they would lose to the Eagles' backups. This Eagles team is pretty good. We'll see though. I don't really know. I don't really know what to expect. It's a 1 p.m. game in Philly at the Link, and that'll wrap up the season for the Giants. But we will talk about all of the games for next week, as well as all of the picks that we've made for this NFL Friday Pick'em segment. It's been a fun season. It's been a long season. A lot of picks. Some picks made, some picks were not made. But I do want to do, I want to talk about a little bit of a more fun segment before we get back into the real world. And let's talk about fantasy. Fantasy, for the most part, has wrapped up this year. A lot of different leagues. So I'm in two myself. One pretty bad. The other one, I got to win the championship. That was pretty cool. But the reason I wanted to talk about this is that I saw a video last night of this guy's predictions for the top 10 of the first round. Actually, it would be the top 12 if you're in a 12-man league for next year. And I wanted to see, I think Lou and I, we talked about it a little bit last night. But Evan, I want to get your thoughts on this guy's top 12 going into fantasy next season. So he's got Jamar number one, Saquon two, to me, the most controversial one, Bijan at three, Jettas at four, CD at five, Puka six, Amon-Ra at seven, Gibbs at eight, Achane at nine. Another, I think, a little bit of a steep pull there. Nico Collins at 10. I love that. Derrick Henry at 11, and Malik Nabers. Love that. Sneaking in at 12. There's a couple of different ways I would probably go about this, maybe shake it up a little bit. Overall, I think that's a solid first round. But Evan, let's start with you, man. After this whole season of fantasy football, real football, anything football, how does that 12 stack up for you?
I mean, the odd man out is obviously Bijan at number three. I took Bijan at number three in this year's fantasy draft, ended up trading him, I think, in weeks 6, week 7, because he couldn't put up more than 10 points a game. His ceiling was 10 points. Eventually, he did go off as soon as I traded him, and I finished second to last. T. Higgins got me a big W in the toilet bowl, so that
Love.
was huge. That was huge. 40-point game from T. But yeah, I mean, Bijan Robinson, I guess the thought process there is without Kirk and with Penix, they'd be relying on running the ball and checking it down more next season, I think, in that spot. But I think it's solid besides that. I was surprised at Nico Collins being as low as 10. I think Nico Collins should be higher than 10. He was dominating before he got injured. had more than double other receivers that were in the top five receiving stats. Some of those names were Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, guys like that. But I think besides that, it looks good. I think Neighbors is also somewhat quarterback proof. I mean, he proved that this season. If you can get 1,000 yards with Tim Boyle starting some games, I guess you are confirmed quarterback proof. So I think it's pretty solid for sure.
Yeah, I think, and this is less of a statement on Puka than it is on some of the other players that that guy put below him. I like Puka, and I think as someone that drafted Cooper Kupp, it's become very clear who the number one in the Rams offense is now. Puka has taken over. He's Stafford's top target, and he's really been his only reliable target on this stretch where the Rams kind of been up and down. To me, though, Jahmyr Gibbs, like that is he, yeah. I think he's top five, yeah. If not top three. He proved that he is a top five, top three running back in fantasy in a running back share, you know, with David Montgomery essentially stealing touchdowns. And he's not even just a goal line back. Like Montgomery gets use all the way up and down the field, but Gibbs with his receiving upside is just so, and that Lions offense is so high ceiling that it allows both of them to operate at a top RB1 level, essentially. With Montgomery's injury, I don't think they've made an official statement yet on like the exact return date. I think there's probably a big chance Montgomery's not ready for the start of the season, which would mean that Gibbs is in the role he's in right now. If you look at the last two games, the numbers he's putting up as the sole RB1 of Detroit, I think either way, like, and the same way, I maybe go Amon-Ra over Puka because the Lions offense is just so, so, so elite and produces at such a high level that even though there are other wide receivers in that Lions room, maybe better to the extent that the Rams have where it feels like it's going to be a sharp drop off after Puka, it's hard for me to take a guy on the Rams over one of the either the top running back or the top wide receiver on the Lions. I think I probably even go Nico Collins. I like Nico Collins a lot. I think I probably go Nico Collins over Puka. I might go Neighbors over Puka. I think Malik Neighbors, again, the fact he put up, you guys both said it, put up 1,000 yards, and he's not done yet, with the second half of the season, Drew Lock's his quarterback. Like, if he has a average NFL quarterback, Malik Neighbors is going to be a top five wide receiver in fantasy.
No doubt. No doubt whatsoever. We were talking about it last night, and I want to see if you think this is a hot take, Evan. This is unbiased, too. This is just from what I've seen this year. I would take Neighbors over CD, personally, for next year. I think that I would take Malik Neighbors over CD Lamb. I know that comes back. That could be a different discussion, but the quarterback proof take there, Evan, is very important. Malik Neighbors had four quarterbacks. CD had two in Dak and Cooper Rush. And once Dak was gone, what did we see from CD? Not what we normally see from him. I could see Malik Neighbors sneaking into the top seven of these guys here, of the 12. I think A-Chain may fall. I think Bijan will stay in the first round. I don't think he should be three, but with Neighbors going ahead of CD for me, that means he goes ahead of Puka. I would move Amon-Ra above Bijan and below Jefferson. So that would put him at four and Jefferson at three. And that would move Malik into seven territory. So, and then you got to factor in Jahmyr Gibbs. I could really see Jahmyr Gibbs going in the top three as well. Maybe top five, top three, maybe a little bit steep, but Jahmyr Gibbs is something else, man.
Especially after this season where I think what we learned is that, and I feel like this, the landscape's always changing, but if you have an elite fantasy running back, whether that's Saquon or Derrick Henry or Gibbs this year, that's starting to become a game changer again. I think that the people that did zero RB strategy this year really suffered because it's just getting harder and harder to find those gems later in the draft. And there's even becoming a bigger disparity in the first round running backs. So like if you're able to land one of those top three or four guys, that's a big advantage. It's almost like we're maybe not quite to this extent, but what the tight end position was a few years ago, where if you got a Gronk or a Jimmy Graham or Prime Kelsey, you had such a stronghold over that position. I think if you have one of the top three running backs, whether that's Saquon or whether it's Gibbs or if you want to put even an aging Derrick Henry, because he's just going to be a monster in that Baltimore offense again. That's a massive step up over other teams in your leagues.
Yeah, tight
Yeah,
ends are
definitely.
flat too, man. I would put Andrews in there as well for maybe a year or so in terms of prime tight ends. What were you gonna say, Evan?
Definitely losing that middle ground there with running backs, like you're saying, Louis. It used to be there was like a good middle pack of backs, and you're right. Now it's just really good or really bad. So it makes it so much more important to have that good one. But with what you were saying about Neighbors, Will, I totally agree. I think Neighbors, the sky is the limit for where you can put Neighbors in there for the fantasy. He is a complete receiver and then some. Like that, you don't need a quarterback that's good at throwing deep balls like you do for certain receivers like CD. Like Tyreek, in the years that he wasn't elite, Neighbors can he showed with Drew Lock catch 5 yard hitches and take them 70 yards. If the quarterback doesn't need to be that good, he can do everything and he does it all very well. Like, just from a receiver standpoint, I'm excited to see where Malik Neighbors ends up. But I think fantasy wise, we're going to see a jump from his already excellent fantasy season. So I think he should be up there as well.
I think we'd see a jump too with running backs. We're talking about middling running backs. And the reason I say that is that this year, going into the draft this year, there was probably 14 guys, you would say. And then after that 14, it was a steep fall off. Nobody really knew what the deal was. McCaffrey played two games, right? That could be a pick next year. If he is healthy and you get him in the second round instead of the first overall pick, like he's been slated to be the last 2, 3 years, that could be an absolute steal. I don't discredit Isaiah Pacheco as well. Banged up in a good system, had a good year, his second year. I would say he is due for an even bigger leap than he's
I
taken.
agree.
Very solid running back, and he produces. He can receive well. On top of that, Kyren Williams, a top four running back going into the draft last year, not nowhere to be found in this first round. Very solid pickup. So you could get a solid 1-2 punch of RBs in rounds 1 and 2. Whereas, and you know what? Even Breece Hall, who knows? I know this year he may get 5 points, he may get 30 points. Could change next year. Depends on what the Jets do with their offensive line and how he just performs in general. But I think that there's more flexibility with running backs and the wide receivers. Usually now I think you get a little bit more out of wide receivers. You see more of them in the first round. I'm kind of out on Travis Etienne. I took him in the second round because I thought he was gonna have a big year. I'm out on him for that, but you never know. He is another running back that you could say he could have a very solid year. Even James Cook. There's good RB2 options
I
here.
want to give love to Bucky Irving. I'm curious where
Or
he goes in drafts. I think he's like if he's still a late second round guy, I don't think he will be. I think the stock is super high on Bucky Irving at this point. Like I think he's Tampa's starting running back. He is awesome, man. I traded
really
Will
good.
for him. Loved it. Loved every second of it.
He's special, man. He's a
Tampa's
special
offense played
talent.
a wrong into that. Like with Rashad White, I think last season or 2 seasons ago, it was the same thing. Rashad White, they'd always throw him check downs. He'd run all over the field. Crazy
He's brilliant.
fantasy back.
That's a solid 1-2 for a team, though, if you were to draft that way, like Gibbs and Montgomery, how they are. But I think next year you're going to see a little bit more flexibility in rounds 1 and 2 as opposed to this year where it was, no one really knew. Jonathan Taylor's not even on this. I took him in late in the first round. He was hurt, didn't play well. And the last 4 weeks or so, he's been a top 10 running back. So there's a lot to move, a lot to see here with fantasy football as it concludes this year and we go into next year. I think drafting wise, it'll be a little bit more exciting. There's definitely some more talent to choose from within rounds 1 through 3, especially with some of these guys that were in the first round this year, specifically CMC, who you will probably be able to get in the second round, maybe even the third round, depending on how skeptical your draftees are. So we'll see. Very fun year though. Wanted to throw that in as a little fun segment. Let's move over though to the picks. Let's do the final pick'ems. But before we get into the week 18 slate, let's take a look at the standings for our NFL Friday host. So Grace, she leads with 182 wins at first. Myself, I'm at 181 in second. Joe Henry, 176 in the three hole. And then Lou at 175, Eli at 172. And in the hunt, that'll round up the top five. And in the hunt, you have Jack at 171 and Barrett at 170. Could definitely see both of them getting in. But it's been a fun season doing that, picking who you think will win in these matchups. The playoffs, we're still undecided on the playoffs. We're going to decide pretty soon. We have to decide pretty soon on how we're going to do that for the top five or so teams that will be in these playoffs for NFL Friday. It'll be different than just picking who you think will make it. We may do it bracket-based. We may throw in some parlay action and see who would be a first touchdown scorer, how many yards, whatever. We're going to get creative with it. But, Evan, we have to ask you a question here, my friend. From week 15 on, picks for the kid. He was in a playoff spot. Ev, what happened, dude?
Yeah. Well, you see, I noticed that the Giants were tanking. They were tanking. The Giants are my team, favorite team. And I felt like I had to go along with them at some point. I was like, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down together. So now that they've won that game, I got to come back this week. I got to make my picks finally. I got to have a big one. I got to match the Giants' energy in their tank. That's what I'm going for at this point. I think that's all I have left to play for. So,
yeah, you slot in at 11 right now at 134, right above Chris Carino and the tanker himself, Chaz McAdams, who is 83 and 173, has not made a pick since week 12. And he only made four in that week. So God bless Chaz and his 0-for record. I don't want to do the math right now because it's a lot. So a lot of zeros in the win column for Chaz McDogsticks. But this has been fun.
Well, I'll say that it's a big we got to throw some love to or maybe not love, but definitely paint the picture of Jack and Barrett. Huge week for them because it's sneaky not easy to gain ground on people in this league because we're doing the picks straight up. So a lot of times there are a lot of obvious picks that everyone just kind of gets unless you're like you have the cojones to take a chance on the underdog. What makes this week so interesting is that think about all – there's a reason fantasy football a lot of times doesn't happen week 18 or the last week of the season. It's because all these different teams are sitting people. So there's so many different games. We're going to see it when we do the pick segment right now. So many different games where you're going, all right, well, one team is clearly better than the other. But what does that team look like when their backup quarterback and their number one running back isn't playing the entire game? So very interesting to watch. Kind of shocked that Jack fell out of the top five. I feel like he'd been in there for a while. And Barrett
had a rough week last week, went 10-6.
Barrett out of nowhere had like an undefeated 16-0 week. I think it was 2 weeks ago.
15-1. 15-1 because the Bucks lost to the Cowboys. Right. But that
put him that up propelled big. Him back up. He's alive now.
Big time, dude. He's had double-digit wins in the last 5 weeks, including that 15-1 shout, and he went 11-2 in week 14. So Barrett, he's making some moves. He could definitely squeeze in. I think both of them could end up squeezing in as well. We could have a 3-way tie. It all depends, though, man. It all depends on what Eli and yourself do for your picks this week. We have a full slate. A lot of pressure indeed to round out the wild card spots here in our NFL Friday pick'ems. But why don't we pick 'em as we start to conclude our episode here? Let's start with the Saturday games. It's a big AFC North tilt. Gotta love it. Very, very good stuff. Browns, Ravens, the 4:30 game. The Ravens, 17.5 point favorites. They got a lot to play for. No brainer for me. I'm going with the Ravens.
Gotta go Ravens.
Yeah, Browns don't have, as long as DTR is their quarterback, Browns don't have a shot. There's no way.
Yeah, good season Cleveland. That's going to be it. I think the Ravens will win the AFC North specifically with this game. Mm-hmm. So I made a mistake while we were talking about this game before. Bengals Steelers is 8 p.m. Saturday night. Ooh. Not Sunday night football. That's a different ball game. That is Vikings Lions, which makes a lot of sense. But still, the primetime slot for Saturday, January 4th. And with that being said, at 1.5 point favorites, it's the Bengals on the road. Very crazy stuff. But with that being said, I'm going to go with the Bengals, though. I think that they definitely have, they have the cojones to go out and win this game. They had to win out. I think they will win out. And it was 3 in a row to give themselves the best shot to make the playoffs. I think the Steelers will still make it, but the Bengals really need to win this game in order to just get that wild card spot, and I think that they will definitely do that.
I mean, right, Ev, we were talking about earlier about, well, last time they played, since he put up 38. One of the things we didn't necessarily hit on earlier in the show, there's been some really weird dialogue from Pittsburgh about on the defensive end. You get quotes from, I think TJ Watt had one. I want to say that Hayward had one as well about it's hard to win when you have 10 guys bought in and one person isn't doing their job. Or I think it was you have 10 guys doing their job and one person isn't. And then you got similar quotes from other people on the Steelers' defense. Not the time to be having internal issues on the defensive end going up against arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. His stats certainly have him. If he's not one, he's top three. And we chronicled it earlier. The Bengals are red hot. The Steelers are starting to cool off, even though they've been playing elite competition. The way the Bengals are playing, I think they're a lot closer to elite competition than the record says they are. My one, I don't even think it matters if they win or lose. I don't think it would necessarily affect whether or not they win or lose. I think this could be the last game that Zach Taylor coaches with the Bengals.
I think he's definitely on the hot seat right now for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's lucky to have this job right now. When you like, they're so lucky they
beat
the Broncos last week, despite all the clock mismanagement and stuff like that. I think if they lost that game the way he mismanaged the clock, I think he would have been fired. I'd be surprised if he survives this offseason, considering all the criticism that he's gotten this year.
Yeah, it looks a lot worse when Joe Burrow's having the season he's having too. And then you go out and put that record up. You make Joe play like Superman to win games in overtime. Everything just makes it look worse. But like you said, worst possible time to have locker room troubles is going into a Week 18 big matchup for the Steelers right now. Like you said, Steelers the cold team, Bengals the hot team. I think the hot team with the best quarterback in the NFL right now wins this game.
100%. I'm going with the Bengals, going to ride the hot hand. They've been very exciting to watch. And I'm also very invested in the Ja'Marr Chase Triple Crown race. That's always pretty fun to see. And he was on my fantasy team this year. God bless him. Won me some big bucks. Gotta love him. Let's go to the 1 p.m. slate on Sunday. We'll start with the Giants and the Eagles. I'm just going to go right out and say it. It's going to be the Eagles. I think the Eagles are that good of a team, even with sitting their main guys, they will beat the Giants with backups. I think that's just how it's going to go down. The Eagles are that good. The Giants need to lose. They need to lose. Stop winning. Done with it. We'll win next year or we won't. It doesn't matter. I'm done with this year. It'll be the Eagles.
I echo everything you said, Will. I have nothing to add.
No winning. Done with that.
I think it's embarrassing that the Giants are sent, like, this is our team, like, number one A's, the Giants number one A's right now, and they are +3 against the Eagles backups. I think it's pretty embarrassing for the Giants. They're projected to lose by 3 points against backups.
No Hurts, no Saquon Barkley. I would assume there's probably going to be no A.J. Brown and no Devontae Smith. That's the entire offense, and that probably includes Dallas Goedert as well. Just get all the backups in there, and I think they'll do just fine. NFC North action. Bears, Packers, very disappointing season if you're the Chicago Bears. Started out 4-2, and they have lost every game since. 10-game losing streak, a little bit quieter than the Giants' 10-game losing streak, but the Bears, awful situation. Didn't think it was going to be great. Didn't think it was going to be this bad, though. Pretty sad to see. We'll see what happens with them. They got a whole lot of issues to fix, maybe even with the front office and clearly with the coaching staff. But that offensive line, wow, are they not performing well? It's going to be the Packers at 10-point favorites in Lambeau, 1 o'clock, another game. Don't have a lot to say about it other than be a nice win for the Packers.
I think I'm there too. I don't think the Packers are sitting people across the board. And even if they do sit Jordan Love, I don't think Malik Willis is a big enough drop off for the Packers to suddenly get smoked by the Bears. I'm not too worried about this one. I think this is Green Bay and another strong win going into the playoffs.
Yeah, Packers strong run game, great defense, and Malik Willis not that bad of a backup quarterback at all. The Bears and specifically Caleb Williams are a lot worse on the road this year statistically too. So in Lambeau's huge. Yeah, it's got to be the Packers.
So these next two games are actually just a tad bit more interesting than I initially said that they were. And that is between the Falcons and the Panthers and the Saints and the Bucs here. And that is because the Falcons swept the Bucs in the regular season. Totally forgot about that. So if the Bucs do fall flat, which I don't think they will, they're playing the Saints and they're kind of rolling as it is right now. Once they played the Giants, they really went on a tear. They did lose to the Cowboys, but they won four straight before then, and then they beat the Panthers this week. So 5-6 in their last, or 5-1 in their last six games. We'll start with the Panthers and the Falcons. I will take the Falcons. The Falcons need to win this game to stay in. If they lose, it's over, and I think they will. 7.5 point favorites at home should be a pretty easy lock for them. But they desperately need to win this game, and they got to pray that the Saints come alive and steal one from the Bucs for sure.
Yeah, I'll ride Falcons. I actually think they showed some pretty nice life last week, even though they came up. I mean, listen, there. If Young Hoku is healthy or Young Weku is healthy, that's a 58-yarder that maybe they hit and maybe they beat Washington. I'm not sure whether that game says more about Washington or more about Atlanta. I have a feeling it might say more about Washington moving forward than it does about Atlanta and Michael Penix. But Michael Penix made a pretty elite throw at the end there to force overtime. Falcons have enough talent to knock off the Panthers here and keep their hopes alive. But we'll get into whether or not that's going to matter in a second.
Yeah, we saw the Panthers get dismantled by Baker and the Bucks. I think they're packed it in for the season officially. I don't think the Falcons have. I think the Falcons are still going out there playing with those young stars, playing with pride. Give me the Falcons.
Saints, Bucks. I'm gonna go with the Bucks, even though the Falcons need the Saints here. The Bucks. I was pretty high on them before all of their injuries this year, and I know it. Some people think it's a little overrated. I'm also in on the Mike Evans 1,000 yard hunt. I think it's pretty cool that you can have 1,000 yards in every single season that you play in. That would be pretty cool if he can get that done. Baker's had a very, very awesome year. After everything that went down in Cleveland, went to Carolina, struggled, went to LA as the backup, did okay, settles in with Tampa, and it's a nice career resurgence for him. He's got over 4,200 yards. It's going to be closer to 4,400 with 39 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. Great year for Baker. Bucky Irving over 1,000 rushing yards. The Bucks have some talent here, man. Mike Evans has 915 yards to play with here, so 85 yard game, and he's got 1,000 yards after missing three games this year. So I will go with the Bucks. I do think that they will hand it to the Saints, but it does make things a little interesting for the NFC South for sure.
It's the Bucks. It's gonna be ugly, man. The Saints have been so bad down the stretch here, and especially now that Kamara's out. Saints just lost to the Raiders 25-10.
Brutal.
This is a bad. Currently, they are probably worse than the Giants. I think they're worse than the Panthers. Like they might be the. It's between them and the Dorian Thompson Robinson led Browns for who is the current worst football team in the NFL in terms of like ability to win this week. So yeah, unfortunately, for the Falcons, I don't think they really have a shot here. That's not going to stop them from trying. I was pulling for the Falcons because I had some money on the line for a divisions parlay. Now that I've kind of given up on that, I think this is, if the way that it's trending, this is the best result. You want the Bucks in the playoffs. The Falcons would not bring nearly the same energy. It's kind of what we talked about on the AFC, where you want the Broncos or the Bengals in. You want the Bucks in because are they even going to get out of the first round? Maybe not, but they have the talent to make that game close. Again, defensively, I think they just don't have enough to actually do a meaningful postseason run. But that offense should, in theory, be able to go up with just about anyone. So I think the Bucks crush the Saints here.
Yeah, could see it.
Yeah, I think the
We'll
Bucks
go down.
destroy him as well. I think the Bucks destroy him as well. It would be cool to see a Marshon Lattimore Mike Evans game. I wish he was still back with the Saints. Those are always fun to watch them go, those two go at it. But I agree, Lou. I think it would be a lot more beneficial to see the Bucks there. And we saw what the Bucks did last year, beating the Eagles in the playoffs as well. So they've
Yeah.
known that they can play spoilers. Pretty much the exact same team, just running it back this year. So.
Just minus Chris Godwin, but
Right,
yeah,
right.
pretty much a little bit of a stronger running back presence as well. The Bucks are definitely fun, was high on them. I think they'll be pretty solid next year as well. Moving on though, Commanders Cowboys, this game really doesn't matter for either team. I will go with the Commanders. With that being said, Commanders have a playoff spot locked in. Maybe they try to go and win. I don't really think seeding matters all that much. I think that would depend on Green Bay. Actually, what's everyone's record? Yeah, the Commanders, the Commanders do kind of need to win this game so they can maintain that six seed over Green Bay and avoid playing Philly in the first round. The Commanders would play the Rams in the first round if they do hold on there. So I will go with the Commanders over the Cowboys. They are 4.5 point favorites in Jerry's world. Cowboys are done. That's it for them. Give me Washington.
Give me Washington. Hard
Yeah,
agree.
Washington, better team.
Weird game here. It's not really a weird game. It's not that interesting. It's the Jags and the Colts, a little AFC South matchup here. And I don't really know which way to go here. I don't know if anyone is sitting for the Colts. It doesn't look like anyone is. Jonathan Taylor is still slated as the starting running back. So with that being said, I'll go with the Colts. I think it could be a little bit closer though of a game here. Brian Thompson Jr. is playing as well, so he's had a fun rookie season. Him and his LSU teammate Malik Nabers. LSU is running the league too, by the way. That's pretty cool to watch. Jaden Daniels, Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers, and you've got Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase. That's a pretty fun storyline to hold on to, but give me the Colts. I think it'll be a close one, and that'll end both of their seasons.
Yeah, you know what? I'll go. You know what? I'm gonna go with the Jags.
Fair.
They three of their four wins this year have come against AFC South opponents. They beat the Colts earlier in the year. I really do think this is a toss-up. I think maybe you could say the Jags are quote unquote heating up. They've won two of their last four. Both of those wins came against the Titans. So this is. Right now, I'm saying the Jags. I think I'm gonna have to spend time thinking about this on the sheet. I may switch back to the Colts by Sunday 1 p.m. I mean, listen, the Colts just lost to the Giants. I think it's fair that there's not a ton of confidence in them going into Week 18. That being said, I don't know how much confidence you can have in the Jags. I do really like Brian Thomas.
Yeah, I think for me it's going to be big if Anthony Richardson plays. Right now he's trending towards playing. So if he does play in this game, I think it's got to be the Colts. Joe Flacco just isn't the Joe Flacco. We were seeing him come in and be the backups the last couple of seasons. Their offense is also built for a quarterback that can move the way AR can. I saw him play against the Jets. He was very good against the Jets. So I think he'll be a big factor in that one. If he doesn't play though, I think I might take the Jaguars as well, Lou. It gets weird in these in-division games when it gets late, especially two teams that are bad, two teams that are playing for nothing. It usually goes to the home team in those scenarios, a 1 point spread, weird things happen. So I think if Joe Flacco's starting for the Colts, I'll go for the Jags. But if AR plays, I'll take him in the Colts.
The Texans and the Titans now. Pretty interesting game here. Texans, as we were saying before, nothing changes with them. They will be the four seed no matter what because they did win the division. So if you are the Texans, you are probably going to sit everybody, and you should. And the Titans are actually favored in this game. They still have a really solid defense. With the win there, that shakes up some things with the draft, and I could see it happening 100%, especially if everyone is going to sit for the Texans, as they should. That could mean something for the Giants, especially if the Giants lose, and the Titans would be at 4-13. So, but bias aside, I do think the Titans will win this game with everyone sitting on Houston. So give me the Titans to take down Houston to end the season.
I'm manifesting a higher Giants draft pick. I do think that with the Texans sitting everyone, it's going to put Tennessee in a better spot. I still think they have the ability to win games against below average NFL teams. So yeah, let's ride with Tennessee, man. Let's get a quarterback for the Giants.
Yeah, Tennessee is nowhere near as bad as the Giants. They can't be discredited that much. Their number ones should be able to beat another team's backups, especially with how good that defense is. That's a real NFL defense, one of the best. So if it's going against backups, I think for sure Tennessee can win this game. I'll take the Titans.
Another two teams not really playing for a whole lot here, and it was a weird game the couple weeks ago when they matched up for the first time. That's the Patriots and the Bills. Patriots came out swinging, put up 14 points in the first quarter. They did not win that game. Bills also don't need to win this game. No one can catch them for the 2 seed. They're locked in there to face whoever will be that 7 seed in the AFC. I will still go with the Bills. I think that they're that good of a team, even if Josh Allen doesn't play, which I think he might for a little bit to help for his MVP case. At the end of the day, there is a good chance that he does not, because why would you do that if no one can catch you and if you can't go anywhere else, why would you start any of your main guys? We'll see, though. He does have an MVP case on the line as he battles with Lamar Jackson for that, even though I believe it's a little bit further wrapped up than others may. But I'll still take the Bills in New England over the Patriots.
I do think we really don't see Josh Allen at all. I think the Bills this year are very locked in on getting to the Super Bowl. I think this is, again, another year where the Bills should look at the Chiefs and go, hey, the Chiefs are really good. We're better. And I do think the Bills are the best team in the AFC. Their backups miss Trubisky, which I think makes it really interesting, because I think that's a fun backup that can totally lead a still good Bills team to a victory. Pats just announced that Drake May is playing and they're prioritizing the win over draft positioning. I think that's the right play. I also really like Drake May. I think he's been a really fun. The rookie quarterbacks this year have overwhelmingly been really, really fun. And he's another one of those guys that it feels like he has that early mature sense of confidence. And again, maybe this is a little Giants bias, but I actually don't think it really affects the Patriots all that much if they fall from 1-4 or something like that. I think they're not taking a quarterback. They should believe in Drake May. And whether you're getting Travis Hunter or another one of the guys that you would like to – one of the non-quarterbacks in the high portion of this draft, I think the Pats are in a really good spot no matter what happens. And I'd love to see them knock off the Bills here. I think that would be a nice end to what's been a – despite the record, I think a lot of promising things have happened for the Pats this season.
Yeah, I think the Pats can definitely win this game. I think the Pats are going to win it for sure. I think Mitch Trubisky is a valid backup, absolutely. But that the Patriots, I think it being in New England is a big difference. If this was in Buffalo, I'd probably give it to the Bills still with their stadium atmosphere. It's just like no other in the NFL, but Drake May has been pretty good this season, like you were saying, and they're in a weird spot with Travis Hunter. I don't think the Patriots want to take Travis Hunter at 1 overall. That's just, you don't really take someone that's not a quarterback at 1 overall. So I don't think they mind, like you said, Lou, going down a couple spots to get a win here with their young quarterback and young core and everything. They're already headed in the right direction. They're not directionless like the Giants, so they should just keep moving forward.
I know this didn't age well, but I did think about that year. The Giants, it was the Chase Young Bowl. The Giants and Washington were going for that number 2 overall pick, and Daniel Jones led the Giants to that win over Washington. And now in retrospect, it's kind of funny because Daniel Jones was not the future franchise guy that the Giants hoped he would be. But at the time, that was a really fun win because it was one of Jones's best games as a rookie. And I think once you have your quarterback, it's more important for your rookie quarterback to have good games and win your team games than it is to continuously tank and maybe get the best possible pick that you can. I think there's a lot of value in giving a rookie quarterback that you believe in confidence for his next season and just down the stretch. Every win for a rookie quarterback means something. Jones didn't pan out. That win for Washington still meant something for his career. And so that's, I'm always a big, when you have a rookie quarterback, screw the pick, man. You want that rookie quarterback to take steps towards becoming the guy you ultimately need him to be.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It definitely meant something. I remember that a big celebration after the game, even though they didn't get that second overall pick. Chase Young is also on his third team now, so
Yeah.
end of the day, it didn't really matter all that much. But it definitely matters for rookie quarterbacks, and the Patriots are in a position where, yeah, they can win that game and still get a high overall pick and still get someone that they want because they luck out with the sandwich of quarterback hungry teams that are above them or could end up being, or I'm sorry, no one's above them right now, but could end up being above them and below them with the Browns, Titans, and Giants. Three teams that need quarterbacks are going to be all over that right now for the draft. And the Patriots just simply don't need to bother with that. They could end up winning this game, having the Titans jump them, having the Giants jump them, and still ending up with Travis Hunter, adding a weapon for Drake May or adding a weapon for the defense, whatever he decides to do. Maybe he does both. Who knows? But the Patriots could still get their guy regardless. Chiefs, Broncos. I think it's going to be the second time I pick against the Chiefs, and that was that Bills game when I picked the Bills for that. I will pick the Broncos here. The Chiefs have no need to win this game whatsoever. They could still finish 15-2 and have an incredible season. They got the bye locked up in the AFC. Broncos need this win extraordinarily. They're 10.5 point favorites, so I wonder if the Chiefs are playing third string guys. It's pretty nuts. But I will go with the Broncos. Take Denver. They need this win badly. They're at home. I think everything lines up pretty nicely for them.
Yeah, I keep hearing things about Chiefs strategizing. Who would you rather play if someone was able to upset the Bills? Would you rather play Cincy or would you rather play Denver? I don't think that actually becomes a factor. I think that's more a media talking point than an actual football talking point. I also don't think, kind of contrary to what I said earlier, I don't know that there's any division rivalry here happening for the Chiefs. I don't think the Chiefs are looking to block the Broncos out of the playoffs any more than they are just they want to play a good game of football and stay healthy. And really, stay healthy is the priority for the Chiefs. If the Chiefs are healthy, we know them. They're a juggernaut. They're going to have a really good shot at getting to the Super Bowl. The most important thing for them here, they have the number one seed locked up, is just stay healthy. So I don't even think it's a matter of them strategizing to make sure the Bengals don't make the playoffs or anything like that. I really think it's simply the Broncos need this game, the Chiefs don't. And the Broncos are good enough that when they need a game and the other team doesn't, they should win that game. And I would love to see, I'd really like to see the Broncos in the playoffs, man. I love Bo Nix. I think they're a fun playoff team.
Yeah, the Broncos are a good team. They played the Chiefs earlier in this season in Arrowhead, and that was a really close game, came down to a field goal. So I think even if Carson Wentz was starting and everyone else, or if only Patrick Mahomes was the only one not starting for the Chiefs, I'd probably still take the Broncos. I think the Broncos will win this game by a lot, especially if other players aren't playing for the Chiefs as well.
49ers Cardinals next up. A little bit of an interesting matchup. Don't know where I want to go with this. Did just read from Schefter and Rappaport that Josh Dobbs will start for the 49ers ahead of Brock Purdy. He's not practicing. He's got an elbow injury. I think it may have been that. It could have still been that scenario, regardless. Disappointing season for the 49ers and an injury-riddled season at that. But with that being said, I think I will still take the 49ers, though, to squeeze out a win. Draft positioning for both of these teams, I don't really think it matters all that much. None of them were that bad. Cardinals were in it for a little bit, and the 49ers, they still have a lot of weapons. I think they're going to be very good next year. If they could stay healthy, they lost pretty much everybody. They lost the number one wide receiver. They lost the best running back in football. I think they'll be back to where they should be next year. But I will take them on the road against the Cardinals, give me the 49ers.
I'm going to be flip-flopping on this one. I know Arizona is the favorite here. If Brock Purdy was playing, I'm taking the Cardinals. For some reason, I love Josh Dobbs. And people forget, he was really fun last year. Kind of a revenge game for him because he started off the season. Was that last year he started off with the Cardinals?
It was, yeah, and he got traded to Minnesota. Yep.
He was good with Arizona and with Minnesota. So I don't know if it's necessarily a revenge game, but we do see players that when they go up against their former team, there's a little extra, you know, extra gusto in there. I like Josh Dobbs. I'm a little scared to pick against the Cardinals. I really think this is going to be one I keep checking until 4 o'clock on Sunday because Arizona just exploded. They got McBride the touchdown. Murray looked pretty good in that game. That offense is going to be tough to contain. I think this is one of the tougher games to pick this week, but for now, I got excited about Dobbs, so I'm going to go with the Niners.
Yeah, I totally see the Dobbs hype and all that. I think I'm going to go with the Cardinals just because of how injured the Niners are right now. It's everybody. I couldn't believe Brock Purdy went down. Also, shout out to Fordham legend Nick Sakel. She got a whole lot of burn in the last game, played pretty much that entire game at left guard. But I think the Cardinals are just – they're just playing their healthy team, and the Niners are absolutely not. Pretty much everybody on the Niners injured right now. The offense, the defense, the quarterback. So I think with all those injuries and a season that has just been a huge disappointment, the Cardinals, a solid team at pretty much everything, is going to win against a battered and bruised Niners.
Dolphins, Jets, we talked about it a little bit. Not much more to go in on that. I'm going to go with the Dolphins. They need it more. It could go either way, though. They're playing in MetLife. I will stick with the Dolphins, though. They got to fight for this playoff spot. They need this win over the Jets to just give themselves a chance. Could definitely see the Jets swooping in and winning a game for fun, sticking it to a division rival, but I will lean the Dolphins.
I'll go Dolphins as well. I mean, we talked about it a lot earlier in the show. It's a case of one team needs it way more than the other. I also think even with Huntley in at quarterback, I think the Dolphins are just playing better football than the Jets are. That's not good. Not a good sentence about the Jets, but it is, I think, true.
I think I'll take the Jets here. Like I said earlier, they just have a lot of good players, a lot of talent. I think they're winning the quarterback battle here with Rodgers against Huntley and in their home at MetLife. I think the Jets can pull this one out and finally put together, you know, a good offensive performance that teams that are bad but have good players typically do down the season when they don't matter.
Seahawks, Rams, another game. Well, before I say anything, let me just check the NFC. It shouldn't matter for anybody, and it probably
Seahawks are eliminated, so that's it shouldn't.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in terms of Bucks, Rams. If the Bucks win, they'll be 10-7, and the Rams lose, they'll also be 10-7. I'm not too sure how that affects anything. I don't think there was a head to head between those two teams this year.
I don't see one.
So with that being said, the Rams are hot right now too. They've won 5 in a row. They're playing good football. They did not play the Bucks this year. I don't know how the tiebreaker would work, but I will still go with the Rams. 11-win season for them. That would be pretty nice. Didn't expect that from them. Very solid football team. I don't know if they make any noise, but Seahawks are out of it now. It's over. Give me the Rams. Take down the Seahawks.
The thing is, do we know if the Rams are playing the starters or not yet?
Oh, that's so true. The Seahawks are 5.5-point favorites, so
I think if this is a game where Puka's not playing, Stafford's not playing, I'm going Seahawks.
Yeah.
If they care about the seeding, and they kind of should care about the seeding, there is a big difference between potentially being the 3 or the 4 seed. It's basically, do you want to play a 14-2? A 14-win team, or do you want to play? It would be either, you know, Washington or the other, you know, one of the other wild card teams. you don't really want to go into battle with either of the Lions or the Vikings round one. So you really would like to make sure that you stay at that three seed, I would think. I don't know. The fact that the Seahawks are favorites makes me think that there might be some funny business going on. So for now, I will say Seahawks, but I will update later in the sheet once we get better word about what's happening with the Rams.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing because -5 would 100% point to the fact that the Rams aren't playing key players. I don't think that line would exist at all. If the Rams were fully healthy, they would be favored in the game, you would assume, as the playoff team, as the team that's won 5 straight games. But I'll take the Seahawks too, considering that would mean that the Rams are sitting key players and the Seahawks, a good team, good players, can 100% beat, say, a backup-led Rams that don't have Matt Stafford, in my opinion. So I'll take the Seahawks for now.
Next game is Chargers-Raiders. Chargers are already in, but would assume that seeding has a little bit to do with it here, especially if the Steelers lose. That could end up setting things up for a Ravens-Steelers playoff game if the records or the tiebreakers go in favor of the Chargers. And I do think the Chargers will win this game. I'm not sure if they're sitting anybody. They're favored. I know they're playing the Raiders. But I will still go with the Chargers. I think they could definitely use this win over the Raiders as well. And if it means anything for them, I would assume that they're going for that. So give me the Chargers over Las Vegas.
Yeah, I'm going to go Chargers too. I think Harbaugh wants his guys to go pretty strong into week 18. That knowing what we know about him, I don't know that we'll see a ton of guys sit. And even if they do, I feel like Harbaugh gets a lot out of his players. And as much as the Raiders have really taken themselves out of the tankathon with a couple wins here, I think they're starting to heat up. Aiden O'Connell actually looks like a pretty serviceable NFL quarterback at this stage of the game. So I don't think this is a layup, but I do think I side with the Chargers here.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Harbaugh-led Chargers will have some grit, end up winning a close one in the end. Just so much better talent besides the quarterback position across the Chargers than you have on the Raiders.
And Will, the last, what's up?
Here's the interesting, you were asking about the Rams and Bucks, kind of like if the seeding gets affected.
Yeah.
The NFC, if there's no head-to-head, it goes to division record. The Rams are 4-1, the Bucks are 3-2, but they're both facing divisional opponents this week.
Right.
So I think we have to go even a further layer down. This is crazy. Then it goes into common games. I'm not going to be able to figure this out right now, but like, if the Bucks win and the Rams lose, I think it goes to like the third, fourth, or fifth tiebreaker.
Whoa.
It's going to get, it could get a little crazy there.
It could mean a little bit more then. For the Rams, that is.
You know what? It's easier for the Rams if they just win. If they win, they don't care about it.
Exactly. Yeah, they just need to win. Because the Bucks desperately need to win, and they probably will. So, last game on the tilt for the regular season, week 18. It's going to be a thriller. I'm so happy that this is the Sunday night football matchup. It's the Vikings and it's the Lions. It's for the NFC North and that elusive number one seed. In the NFC, with the win, the Vikings will be the number one seed and clinch the division, as well as the Lions. So whoever wins is the number one seed, plays in the divisional round, gets a bye for the wild card, and wins the very, very tough NFC North that it was this year. I'm going to go with the Lions, though. I think the Lions are just a stronger team. I know the Vikings have been playing pretty well. They've won 9 in a row. Holy cow, I didn't know that, but the Lions, I'm there for the story. I hope that they are the NFC champions at the end of the day. And I really do hope that it's Lions-Eagles in the conference championship. I think that would be the most fun game to watch. Or if it could work out that way, the Vikings, that would be a fun matchup as well for an NFC championship game. But I'd really like to see the Vikings, or I'd like to see the Lions go that far and hopefully into the Super Bowl. And having a 15-2 season would be really good. I would assume that this is the best record that they've gotten in their franchise's history. And that's pretty cool to see because the Lions have historically, especially in our lifetimes, have been really, really bad and not anymore. So let's go with the Lions to close out the pick'ems for the regular season on NFL Friday.
It's the perfect game to finish the season. I ride Lions. I've been behind them all season long. I think they're clear and away the best team in the NFC, even with the injuries they have on the defensive side, and it feels like all of their impact starters defensively are hurt. They feel like a force of nature. I think this game's gonna be electric. I imagine it comes down to the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. But I've been riding the Lions all year long. I'm going to continue to ride them. Lions, let's get it. Let's get the number one seed.
Yeah, I love the Lions. I love watching them play, the way they play and everything. You just bring up those injuries, Lou, and it scares me to take them against the Minnesota offense with all of those defensive injuries. If there's the Minnesota's offense, one of the top five in the league, you need Justin Jefferson, they got targets all over the field. I can just see it being so close late in the game, and then those receivers, that passing attack, forcing pass interferences from these backup corners. There's a backup pass rush coming at Darnold. Everyone's a backup on that defense right now, except for Kirby Joseph, who did have two interceptions by himself last week. He's pretty big, been pretty big for them and the safety spot. But I can just see those backups on that Lions defense being the reason that they lose, because the Vikings' strong suit is that passing attack. I could see it now. I'm assuming a late game flag flies in on a deep ball to Jefferson. It's a PI. It sets up a field goal, something like that on a backup cornerback. So I'm going to take the Vikings due to their elite offense going up against a bruised Lions defense.
I'll just to that point, what I will say is I think the Lions are built for a shootout. And I do think Dan Campbell's aggressiveness, I don't think you're going to see that on the Vikings end. So Dan Campbell's willingness to go for it on the fourth and fives, to go for two, I think maybe that's what could put the Lions over the edge. But listen, I think you're lying to yourself if you're not at least a bit concerned with the Lions defense, not just in this game, but I think going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Minnesota's D took such a step up too from the last couple seasons. Like when the Daniel Jones Giants were beating them in the playoffs, it was like, oh, their defense is terrible. Their defense really isn't terrible anymore. It's kind of good this season.
Vikings have been a really good story. I really didn't think they were going to be all that great, especially after last season. And here we are now. They're a 14-win ball club. One smaller note that just came up before we wrap things up over here. Jaire Alexander, he underwent arthroscopic knee surgery on Tuesday to alleviate some swelling and some pain that he had in his one of his knees, and that'll take him out all the way until the Super Bowl if the Packers do make it that far. So kind of a big blow for the Packers defense, but if things stand the way that they do, it's a pretty tough route to New Orleans for Green Bay. But it's a little small note to add in for the conclusion of our show. That's going to do it here on NFL Friday, the last one of the 2024 regular season. It's always been a blast, especially with you guys. Been a very fun football season to follow along and cover. We got a lot of playoffs coming up, though. NFL Friday still here on WFUV Sports. It's only going to get up. It's only going to go up from here for NFL Friday. But for Lou Orlando, Evan Harkin, I'm Will Talent. We're signing off for now, and we will see you in the next one.